Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper and my guest today is Alpha Schultz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I am looking forward to this conversation. We had a little change around it, whereas I was the interviewee the other day and on your podcast, Money Made Simple, and it's my turn to interrogate them. Those that listen before know I don't interrogate. He's going to have a conversation. So Alpha has over 20 years experience in accounting. I'm going to speak properly. It's Monday morning. I'm getting the words out there. And in finance industries. Starting out as a corporate tax accountant, Alpha soon realized she had more of a passion of personal finance and studied a diploma of financial planning. Now Alpha helps women business owners understand their values, their limiting beliefs, and their habits around money and how they build wealth for the lifestyle that they want to choose. This is such an exciting subject because we often don't talk about money, but we have a lot of beliefs around it, don't we, Alpha? Welcome.
Thank you. Yes. No, it's, yes, I always have to try and hold myself back a bit because I feel very passionate about this topic, and it's evolved a bit over time through my own journey and working with clients and seeing what's going on, and the fact that it's part of our daily lives, but yet we don't talk about it. And I don't understand why either, because it's just, yeah, so many topics that used to be taboo aren't anymore. And I think money is becoming less of a taboo, but somehow for women in particular, we just feel uncomfortable talking about it. And a lot of people feel uncomfortable kind of acknowledging that they're not fantastic at it. And that's okay, because we don't learn it anywhere. And we're all learning anyway on everything we're doing. So the stories and the mind and the beliefs and everything that we have, and there's so much generational sort of trauma really that goes with money, specifically for women, and what we have and haven't been allowed to do for so long.
And in my book, Being Unstoppable, I've got one chapter about money and those values and beliefs around whether it's good or bad or what it means to you, and people put a lot more meaning on it rather than just being something that's transactional, don't they?
Oh, that's it. I mean, money is really just a tool. We use it to buy things, but yet we somehow have internalized it and made it part of our intrinsic self-worth. I mean, years gone by, we used to barter. So money wasn't even really there for a long time. And it's in the history of the world, it's a relatively new concept, especially how we use it. But yet somehow it's elevated itself to such an important extent that it just makes us freeze or makes us feel inept, or in so many different ways it impacts our self-worth, and it really doesn't have to.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the bartering system, because I was reading something the other day and it really switched how I thought about money and investments and everything. And it is, money isn't real. But if you had a pig and you exchanged it for 5 chickens, then it had a real value on it. There was something tangible. But now we have a piece of paper that says this piece of paper is worth $50.
Yeah. And even now it's numbers on a screen.
Yes, correct. And exactly right. You look at your bank account and how much money you have in there or not, but you look at it, and it's, again, just as you said, money on a screen. It's not 50 pigs in the backyard that you can exchange for that. You've got to trust that your banks are doing well and that they're all everything's safe there, because, again, there's nothing that says this is real. And it was a real wow for me thinking about that, because, and then we have, of course, the digital currencies as well, which
even
is
less
a whole different space. I mean, again, it's not real either. It's but it and people are scared of that, but money isn't real either.
Neither of them are real in the tangible construct of what we, you know, we can pick up a glass of water. If we didn't have a glass, the water would just go everywhere. That's tangible and that's real, but money.
Yes. And if we had that piece of paper, that $50 piece of paper in our pocket, we can exchange that for $50 worth of product.
Yeah. And then how do you put the value on what it is that you're buying as well? Because there's the actual monetary value, and then there's the intrinsic value that you have, like some people. And it also depends very much on cultural background. What if there might be something that you buy that you find is of greater value to you than somebody else? So there's the concept of value is also very fluid because it's very individual. And I think a lot of the issues we have around money is we try and apply a one size fits all. $50 to one person is not the same as $50 to another person because it depends how many other $50s they've got and what they choose to actually do with that. One person might choose to invest that $50. Another person might put it into lottery tickets or into poker machines. Like it's so individual, but yet somehow we all... And this is why I start a lot with values and mindset, because unless we understand what our values are, we understand who we are, the concept of money, it's really difficult to get anything to stick. I've worked with, financial planners and because we sort of work hand in hand quite a lot of the time because there's a lot of educational piece that they can't really get into. And then I hear the frustration like, oh, we got this person all set up. And then 6 months later, their credit card debt was back up to $20,000. Because we haven't gone back and figured out the fundamentals of why they're spending and what they're spending it on in the first place and what they're actually trying to achieve with their life. Because if they don't have hope or a view for their lifestyle or their life in general, they're never really going to get there because they don't know where they're going.
And then what popped into my mind, that's very much like losing weight. You can lose the weight, have it set up, but then put it back on again because you haven't changed the basic habits, because you haven't changed what your values and beliefs and again the value you put on achieving that goal or that result. That's really interesting.
So there's a lot of work. I was reading a book the other day called The Psychology of Money, and then I've also been reading James Clear's Atomic Habits, and a lot of these concepts really kind of flow in together, where you have that sense of identity, and that identity then links to the beliefs that you have and the stories you tell yourself, and that then is reinforced by the experiences that you have, which are the behaviors that are repeated constantly, and then those will reinforce the sense of identity you have, and then you end up in this like vicious cycle that unless you go back to the beginning and work on that sense of identity and who you want to be. And this actually works for everything, not just money. It's interesting you just say food. I was going through a phase where I'd started to probably eat a little bit too much chocolate, especially after dinner. And then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to work on who I identify as. And I was like, I don't want to be the sort of person who eats chocolate after dinner every night. So I would go to reach for that chocolate. I was like, no, remember, this is not you anymore. This is not who you identify with, because, and then I have a, you know, bigger reason why, because that also helps you when you, you know, feeling a bit, depends on what your triggers are. But you have to then reinforce that sense of identity again and again and again and have it linked to something. And same with your money. Otherwise, like I saw this happen a lot with clients during the pandemic. They just spent on stuff that they didn't need and they know wasn't the right decision, but somehow they just were impulsively drawn to it.
And then that causes, you know, that flow on effect. I really like that concept, is who do you identify as? And that can come up absolutely with everything, but just, you know, you think of your children and how they have each have a different response to money. You know, I know talk to people, and they some children that are real savers and they won't spend anything, and they'll get other people to pay for them where they can, and then others are generous with their money and their time and have no sense of what I'll need for the future, and then there's everything in between, isn't it? And you can get that in one family.
Oh yeah. I mean, and even when you try and see, like my daughter has, like we do the jam jars, and this is another thing I have with, you know, when they talk about just money being numbers on a screen, it's very difficult to teach a child about money unless you can physically touch it. So she does have her coins in a jam jar, and she has a save jar, which she doesn't touch. She doesn't want to touch that. So that's now, you know, building and building, but her spend jar is almost always empty. So, and her give jar gets bigger, because it's actually quite hard to give money that's not just donate money on a screen either. Trying to find somewhere that you can physically go and donate money, like we'll go to the RSPCA well, you know, there's a local charity we found that help youth. So we have to physically go there and donate. But her spend jar almost always empty. Whereas a friend of hers who often comes with us on outings, she like, you can see her, if she wants to buy something, she just has this resistance to handing over her money. And whereas my daughter's just like, here you go. I'm like, wow, okay. I have to work on that as she gets older.
I love that idea of the jars and, you know, helping children understand real money. And look, I'm a huge advocate for keeping real money, and I encourage everyone to withdraw cash, pay for things with cash. Otherwise, you'll lose that capacity to do it. And as you said, that it then becomes everything's digital, and you really don't own anything at all.
This is magic card that children see you pay with. There you go. Nothing. I'm like, no, it's something.
Most definitely. And one of the points with me, with if I'm making a purchase, we were away on holidays recently, and I went, and there's a lot of boutiques where we were, which is better than the usual shopping center, something different.
Yeah.
And I particularly wanted a dress. I'm very good at having, and one of my friends who's a stylist, to go through colors and style and know exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And I found the dress I wanted, and I thought, oh, that's a little bit pricey, that dress. Am I prepared to exchange half a coaching session for that dress? Am I prepared to exchange an hour's work for that dress? And that's how I've always done things, where they're things that I've hesitated on.
Yes.
I've gone, can I see the value? Am I prepared to exchange that? Yeah, sure. No worries. And I know I'll get a lot of wear out of that dress. But that's always been my method of evaluating whether something is worthwhile to spend on.
Yes, absolutely. And, yeah, there's the multi-use. I'm always like, okay, well, this will go with this, 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 and this. So if it has more than one use, I'm happier to spend the money on something than not. And even with like the concept of tolls, we had a few things on over the weekend. I was like, well, we could either take an extra 15 minutes and not go any of the tolls, or save the 15 minutes and the additional fuel and my time and, you know, like stress is probably a bit too strong a word, but, you know, stress levels, and then pay the toll. And I was like, well, this is why I do what I do. I have money sort of aside to allow lifestyle. You know, we don't have to live that sort of frugally in order to, I can't do that. We don't go out much. I don't really drink. I don't smoke. So there's a lot of other things that I willingly forego because I don't value them as highly as something else like that. So it's definitely being conscious of the choices that you're making and making them consciously, rather than just going, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this, because everybody's doing it, without any kind of conscious thought about what are your values, what sort of lifestyle do you want, what are you prepared to forego, because sometimes there's actually value in that too. I've looked over the last couple of years, debt's been cheap. We don't have to wait for anything really, apart from, you know, when all the COVID stuff happened and it impacted delivery times and whatever, and people had to wait a year for a car. I was like, okay, well, yeah, you wait a year for a car.
I bought a new car last year, and I planned to wait a year because I wanted to pay for it in a year, and they said it'll be here in 2 weeks, and I've gone, right, okay. We'll switch the money around a bit.
Yeah,
which was very nice. But yes, I and my husband waited a year for his.
So it's all that kind of stuff, but you're doing it in a way that, and you understand, like I work on a concept of what I call the money pie, where you carve up your money rather than having like a detailed budget, which is really hard to stick to. You just kind of have, and this is where paying in cash kind of helps, because you can stick to the budget a bit easier. Otherwise, you have to have separate bank accounts if you're going to do it digitally. And you can have bank accounts even set up within an offset account as well, so that you can then go, okay, well, like for instance, when we were saving up for a car, because we knew the car that we had was old and was going to start to die. And I sort of gave us 2 years. So, but then once that 2 years was up and we actually then did need to buy a new car, then the money that I've been putting aside in that pie, I reallocated, otherwise it just disappears. So it's then having kind of that, like, and it feels really good when you know you can pay for something rather than constantly building up debt. But that it's a habit. And the concept of saving, the concept of spending, all of it becomes a habit, which is linked back to the stories, which is linked back to our sense of identity. So it all is interlinked.
Yeah, I remember when I first married, talking about separate things, we had envelopes. I had envelopes for everything.
Yeah.
And because we used to get, for those that are, you know, younger than 40, we used to get paid in cash. Like both of us got paid in cash in a little tiny pouch.
Amazing to think of.
It was wonderful. And you would then dilly that up and it would come in for insurances and house payments and loan payments and everything. Mm. And we managed to pay off the loan in 8 years, a housing loan in 8 years, because the money went into there. And then it went into the bank. Yes. And paid it weekly instead of monthly and all those little tricks and things.
Yes.
But it just meant when insurance money came around, there was money in that envelope to pay the insurance. There was money there to pay it. But we also didn't have the spending habits that I think is a lot more common now, to yes. spend $40 a week on coffees or takeaway lunches. And those things really add up, whereas yeah. we would keep the special things for special days and then economize. And that's an interesting thing too. I was talking about this to some people the other day, that when you are younger, you mm-hmm. tend to have more earning capacity in mm-hmm. your 30s and 40s, more than any age that you are. Yeah. And that's the time probably to do without and to focus on consolidating, so that when you get to 50 or 60, you go, fine, I can have a lifestyle business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can, or not work, or want to do whatever the choice. You can do what you want to do. Yeah. Whether it is still continue to work. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also when you probably have also the most expenses, because you've got probably the bulk of a mortgage happening then. You've also then got children and the fees and things that go with children, especially if you go down. I've had clients where I've just looked at the private school fees and gone, oh my goodness, like hundreds of thousands of dollars have gone into school fees
yeah.
across multiple children. And that's a choice, absolutely. And it's a valid one too, but it's something that has to be factored in. Mm-hmm. And but it's an interesting concept, that how easy it is to spend money now. It's a lot easier than it ever used to be. It's also a lot easier to get into debt than it ever used to be. So credit cards were something that you had to really show like income capacity to be able to repay. Nowadays, you don't really need to show anything. Buy now, pay later is almost eliminated a lot of that. Store cards, there's so many different avenues that you can get into debt. And yes, there's so many different ways that you can, all the conveniences that we have in life, we pay for them. Mm. So, every shop corner I see whenever I go out to the shops, I'd be like, oh, there's somebody selling something for HelloFresh or whatever, or some of these others, and it's all easy meal stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but you're still buying. I look at the budgets of my clients and I was like, you're buying this like meal package, but then your grocery bill hasn't changed. So I don't understand how this is actually helping. It should actually reduce it, because you're paying for this instead of that, but it ends up being on top of.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that. We just kind of need to, and we don't delve into it. We don't review our insurances every year. The costs just go up and we just accept it without question. There's a lot of things that you can do that don't take a whole lot of effort, and you only really need to do it once a year. But it's having that oversight and that kind of, again, not having the story of, oh, it's too hard, I don't want to deal with it, I don't want to have to talk to my insurance company, I don't want to have to ask for a discount because it just makes it look like I'm cheap or I can't afford it. Like, no.
I know, I ask for discounts where I think
it just means you're savvy. It doesn't. So it's just adjusting our frame of mind and how we look at it and how hard we think it's going to be. It doesn't have to be hard. It is if we tell ourselves it is. Like, that's the difference between truth and reality are quite vast if we start to look at what we perceive to be truth about our lives, especially our finances, versus what the actual reality is. And I always sort of bring it back, think of the analogy. I had a friend many years ago who was extremely slim, but thought she was fat. And I thought, it doesn't matter how many times you tell her how slim and how lovely, what she sees in the mirror is her truth and her reality. What I see and what others saw didn't even make a difference.
Yeah.
Same thing goes with your finances. You can look at your bank balance. And I've known wealthy people who look at their bank balance and are scared that they don't have enough. I was like, well, okay, so that fear can be there no matter what your bank balance, which again then comes down to how you identify and the stories that you tell yourself and what has also happened historically. So we look at children who are growing up in the current moment are going to experience a lot of change. So they might be able to adapt better when they're in their teens and 20s, perhaps, than the children who were born maybe 10 to 15 years ago, because we've experienced a lot of economic growth and stability over the last 10 to 15 years. So encountering some instability now, they won't necessarily know what to do with it. So their level of resilience is probably a little bit lower. But the children who are growing through times now, especially through COVID, are kind of like, well, to them, that's normal. They don't know. They don't have a point of reference for anything different. So it's all very much also when we are born, the eras we are born, the stories we hear. Like I heard a lot of stories from my grandmother. She was born in 1920 in Vienna.
Right. That's very different.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of turmoil. And my mother was born in 1944 in Vienna. So still lots of, so I get a lot of that. Whereas my daughter is getting our stories and there's not that much turmoil really in comparison to that. No. So she doesn't understand, you know, sometimes when we might revert back to the stories we heard from our grandparents and when we hear of, you know, things that are, so we're like, okay, we'll pull back the spending now because I mean, we don't have debts. We don't have to worry about the interest rates. We're quite lucky in that way, but there's still other costs that are going up. So we're like, okay, we just need to be a little bit more moderate. We've probably gotten a little bit too comfortable over the last few years. So, but then she'll be like, oh, so why are we suddenly starting to think about this a bit more? So she's going to have to start to learn that now as well. And that same will go for other children and other families too, because there's not as much money around as there was a couple of years ago.
No. Yeah, that there's a whole lot of really good points in there that sense of and interest rates, I mean, for most people are quite telling and that's part of borrowing more than you have the capacity to pay. I know when we were paying interest rates, we had ours fixed at 13%, but they went up to 18%. It was not as much money as people will say, but compared to our income, it was very relevant to what you could afford to pay back. It's, and I think there was more and definitely more cautious in what we did. I know that the 30 to 40 year olds are the ones that are out there really spending at the moment. That's what I'm seeing even though things are impacting them, that it's still got all the electrical. We had to buy a new TV the other day. It just stopped working. So what did we do as boomers? We took it to a TV repair person and asked him, you know, the $60 to check it out.
They still exist, TV repair.
And there's one locally here. We took it to him and said, what's wrong with it? And the $60 to check it out. And what was going to be needing to repair was about $800. New TV was about $1,000. So we waited up and bought the new TV.
Yeah.
But first point of call was, can we fix it?
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than let's just dump it. It was it's a very different space to.
Yeah. And even about. The refreshes that I see, they're like, oh, during COVID, I had some clients like, oh, we bought a new TV. I was like, oh, did your old one break? Oh, no, we just wanted a new one. So, oh, okay. And then same thing with other furnishings and whatever. Most of the furniture in our house is secondhand because I like kind of stuff that's a little bit more solid. And also it's some of the prices out there. Like I wanted to buy a sideboard. It's going to cost $3,000. And I ended up finding an entire dining and lounge suite, which my mum and I split up for $2,500.
Yeah.
And then we split that. So I was like, wow, this is, and it's so nice. It was, you know, handmade in the rocks down in the 1970s and it's not too dated.
Yeah.
But yeah, so things like that. And then selling things too. I pretty much all of the things that my daughter has grown out of, toys, not clothes, I give them away, but a lot of the toys, especially, I will keep boxes and I will keep things because I know I'm going to resell them.
That's a great income earner for people as well. And one is, yes, definitely, I love the tips about going and checking your insurances, your Netflix. Do you need 5 different streaming channels?
Yeah.
How many are you watching? Pick the ones that are really important. I know I did this exercise a couple of years ago, and just even when you're putting in your insurance on, just don't go back to your standard insurance broker. Call around. We always have a policy of 3 and different ones at different times. What was the one? Yeah, and I saved over about $1,000 for the year on just the streaming. Still kept the one that we wanted. And you weren't using Foxtel anymore, so we just went, let's get rid of that one. And it was quite significant what you can save. And I sold some Waterford glasses the other day, Brent. They'd been sitting there as a decoration. Yes. Never been used, brand new glasses. Yeah, and so the person got great value. They bought them for $200. They are worth £350 for the glasses. But, you know, they were better off somebody who wanted to use them as opposed to them sitting there as a decoration. So that there's lots of things, isn't there, that to try and get out of the mindset of
And then to stop yourself from filling that space, because there's another part of the whole concept of like as a world, like just think of a woman's handbag. The bigger the handbag, the more stuff we're going to put in. So if you take stuff out of your house or your handbag, don't just fill it with more stuff. Yeah. It's then about trying to be happy with something that's a little bit more minimalistic, because then what will happen is you'll value the things you still have more because you'll also see them.
Yes.
I noticed that with my daughter, we'll do a big tidy up of her craft area or, you know, some toys she doesn't use, which we'll give away. And then all of a sudden she's playing with all the stuff that she's sort of missed before because it was buried in all of the clutter.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes, like now you'll probably use some of your other nicer glasses even that you probably wouldn't have before because you were, I don't know, there's, you just don't see them as much. So there's that, then coming back to what do I value? Who do I want to be? What do I identify as? All links back into that because we're so interlinked as human beings in terms of what we do and what we think and how we behave that you can't really have one without the other.
Yeah, no, I got someone close to me and we were away on holidays and the other day, and they are very happy spending money. Not necessarily that they have a great deal of it, but they love spending it.
Yeah.
And someone said, oh, we'll be down here on holidays next year for a week. Oh, good, I'll come too. And, you know, a couple of $1,000 later and think just spur the moment decisions because it seems like fun at the time.
Yes.
And it's without reckoning. And I understand there's going to be difficulty down the track. But without thought to it, was this person values having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that seemed like a great idea and fun at the time to do that.
Yeah. And this is where, again, when I talk about that money pie before about how you carve it up, I always say have a fun fund because it's absolutely necessary. However, like you don't go beyond the fun fund. So if you've only got a certain amount of money in that fun fund and that won't cover the trip that you have in mind, well, then don't do the trip right now. Save a bit more until you can cover it. But absolutely have a fun fund. And it'll probably end up going down to empty each year at some point, but you just build it back up again. But only tap into that. Like we're going away for a month back over to visit my husband's family. And the money will come out of that fund. And that's you know, if we didn't have the money in that fund, then we'd have to wait a bit longer and save up for it. But, you know, we haven't done much traveling over the last few years, so there's money in there.
There's money, yeah.
Yeah, so, but it's having that, like, again, having that idea of, you know what, I love to have fun. You're like, great. Well, then maybe you need to put a bit more into your fund each month, which means you need to find that money somewhere else. So you need to be very conscious of some of your other spending to make sure you've got fun money.
Yeah. And again, it's that priority. What do you value the highest? How did you get into finance? I mean, well, it's sort of not as many women are in that space. And I know you have an accountancy degree, which tends to be not as common. It is a lot more now, but I noticed that people I've been speaking to, not necessarily. So what's your story, Alpha?
So I a lot of it started as personal experience, and it sort of blossomed from there because I was helping friends. But I started out, and getting into accounting was a bit of an accident as well, because I love traveling. So I was like, when I was sitting there at the end of school, and my parents and my mum and my grandma were very much, you have to go to university, you have to have a good education. And that was kind of like their thing. And when I sat down in front of the form, I was like, I love traveling, I'll pick international business. But then during the degree, I was like, well, I don't know what job I'm going to get out of this because it's a bit general. So I then added commerce and did marketing, and again, finished that degree and went, I still can't get a job. I got approached by, they were Pricewaterhouse back then. Now they're PwC to do an internship. But then at the end of that, they're like, oh, well, you don't have an accounting degree. I was like, well, you knew that beforehand. So I then thought, okay, well, I'll get an accounting degree. I still didn't end up working for them. I ended up working for KPMG, one of their competitors, as a grad. And didn't really enjoy the tax side. I loved working for clients, and I realized I loved consulting and I loved working with people and problem solving. So I'd figured out that part through that job. And then I sort of progressed and moved a bit. And then I started working as a management consultant and began earning a bit more money, which then made me realize how little I knew about personal finance. So I got a financial planner and then realized they weren't really a planner per se. They were a salesperson who was selling me into funds I was paying lots of fees for. So then I did the diploma of financial planning because I was really interested in it. And my curiosity kind of got the better of me. And as I was doing that, I realized how much it is that we don't get told. So I was starting to make a lot more adjustments in my world. And then some close friends were noticing as well. So they asked me to help them. So I started helping them too, more with the money education side, the product and financial planning side. They could still go to a planner for that, but it was more. And then I was on my own personal development journey as well. So I was doing neuro-linguistic programming. I even looked at hand analysis. I was looking at all sorts of different things to try and figure out, who am I? What's my purpose? Had this whole like crisis of, you know, what am I here for? Probably in my late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
And then I realized when I was working with people that the things that were holding them back were mainly up here, because a lot of money stuff, it's very pragmatic. You can literally, I have checklists, but nobody wants the checklists because they're too overwhelming. And I was like, well, why are they overwhelming? They don't like the spreadsheets. They're overwhelmed. I was like, well, okay, so we've got to go a step even before that. And that's what kind of really delved me down this path. And I love seeing the changes and the transformations that happen. And they certainly don't happen overnight. And they do need a bit of handholding, which is why I reintroduced private coaching again this year, because I felt like there was just a bit of a disconnect. When you just give somebody self-paced learning, it's a lot harder for them to stay motivated. But it was a lot of my personal journey. And then also acknowledging the stuff that I'd seen through my, you know, the way my grandma, like when you talk about fixing, my grandmother had close to 20 irons in her like basement area when we were cleaning out her house, because she thought, oh, I'm going to fix this one. And then she needed an iron, so she bought a new one, but I'm going to fix the last one. And that's just never happened.
A lot of irons, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she had like, oh, I don't know, 50 bottles of water under the house, because water had been turned off in her lifetime. And she had this fear around so many things of lack. And I thought, oh my goodness, all of this, that mindset then passed to my mum to a certain extent, which passed a bit to me. And I thought, we need to fix this, or at least manage it better, so that we're not kind of carrying this like ball and chain of mindset heaviness and lack and paranoia through to the next generation. But then you've got to moderate that as well with, oh, everything's easy and here's the plastic card that pays for everything. So there's that balance.
Magic card.
Yeah. So it's probably a bit of a long-winded answer to your question, but it built and built over time, and sort of ended up me doing now what I'm doing. So.
Yeah. And look, that's a really good example of anyone starting out in life, in business, in education. Eventually, one thing moves to another to move to another. And if you're really fortunate and you do pursue things that motivate you and inspire you, you end up like you're doing and doing things that you love to do, which is a great way to wake up each morning.
It's very zigzag.
And I know when I mentioned you interviewed me the other day, is that, you know, loving Mondays.
Yes, yeah. I love that too. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And not going to a JOB and just choosing as you choose to do, and
that's it.
Choose to be, which is a really nice space when you're in your own business.
But it took a lot of courage and a lot of work for you to get to that point too.
Oh, most definitely. It takes work.
Yes.
But if you stay focused on what your goal is, it's the same with money or losing weight or whatever it is. If you stay on track and that focus into, okay, this is what I want to create. You know, doing those envelopes with cash in them, that was time consuming. It was a lot of effort but the goal was to get the house paid off as quickly as possible. That was part of it. But it was also, let's have money if we needed to buy a new car, as you were talking about. If we had something break down, there wasn't credit cards then.
No.
We didn't. Yeah. I'm not sure what we had to do if we didn't have the money to do things. Well, no, certainly, you didn't go to your parents. That's a big thing. You did not go to your parents and ask for money in that time at all.
You had to make do.
You had to make do.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
is a lot more self-reliance and credit. And that's, I wrote a blog post not long ago about how I think a lot of our money troubles these days have happened as a result of credit being too easy to access. And we want everything now as a result. So if we want it now, then we go borrow money to get it rather than saving. And because when you build it up, there's a sense of accomplishment as well. I remember years ago, I bought my, it was a $5,000 camera, which sounds a lot, but I was really into photography. And I remember when I went into the shop to buy that camera, I felt such a sense of pride because I was like, I have saved for this. And now I finally have this camera. And my goodness, did I value that camera? It just, it felt, it was worth so much more to me because of what I sort of saved and foregone to get it.
That's a really good point about the things that you work towards and achieve, then how much more you value something. Rather than just going and tapping a card and
paying
for it down the track. That really does make a big impact in, and then how you look after things possibly also.
Yeah, you value it more and you keep it more, and then you want to repair it if it breaks. And, you know, rather than, I have a little point and shoot that I carry around as well, and the shutter broke. So I took it to a repair place. And then it never even occurred to me to get a new one. $100 later, and I was, there we go. Now it's fixed.
Yeah.
So
I have to admit, the dining room table we have is a beautiful timber, dark timber table, and the chairs are heavy timber ones with the most comfortable sit at the table, eat, play cards all night type of chairs that you have. It's an expanded table as well, extends.
Yes, we've got one like that too. Yeah.
We bought that dining room table in 1981.
Oh. See, they made things to last back then too. That's fantastic.
And it's really back in fashion. I've reupholstered it twice.
Yep.
And we've had it French polished once during the time. It's due, after a cat getting up and scratching a bit out of it, it's due to have a French polish again.
Yeah,
and I have no desire to move it, sell it. It looks great, and it's really comfortable to sit in.
Yeah. Well, that's got everything, and it doesn't. Yeah, and it will continue to last to the point where you could pass it on to family or it's just that's why one of the reasons why I bought the set that I did. It was a couple who were downsizing and going into a home. And they bought their entire dining suite and lounge suite together when they got married.
Wow.
So that was, I think it was mid-1970s or something, because I found the original little cards that were tucked away in a drawer. And I was like, I just loved the fact that it had a story and it had a life as well, and that the life and the story would continue now in my family.
And the story is an important part of it also with that's what we talked about with business, wasn't it, having a story. That creates a story, and it creates those memories, and it gets the value. So any tips in particular that you want to be able to share with people about? I know we've covered lots and lots of ideas and tips, and I know we come down to the 3 points at the end, but we're not quite there yet. I'm just thinking about some ideas for people about what they might do.
So I think understanding what your core values are first, that is something that's really important. It is part of the three as well, but it's something that I think is really fundamental. The languaging that we use in relation to money, how we, not just the things that we physically, like we hear ourselves say, but also the words that we tell ourselves too. Like every time you say to yourself, oh, I'm not good with money, you're just reinforcing a story that is going to be true, because you keep telling yourself that it's true.
Yeah, so that's languaging. That's so important with anything about, talking negative to yourself. And as you said, you don't need to even say it aloud.
No.
To say that statement like that. And I really struggle repeating statements, and I know you do as well, like, because it's not something you want to own. So we're sort of
But we still catch ourselves doing it. Like occasionally I'll say something, or I'll even blurt it out. And as women, we're very hard on ourselves when we do something, and you'd be like, oh, why did I do that? I was just about to say something which was really mean. I would not say to anyone else, but why am I saying it to myself? So yeah, so the languaging around money, and even the reactions that you have to things, like when you see somebody driving a like a Ferrari or something, or a car that you really like. Like I happen to really like Maserati, but I couldn't probably. I don't think I could ever actually bring myself to spend that much money on a car that just gets. I'm like my accountant brain just goes into the depreciation value. Anyway, but I see that, and I'm just like, oh wow, look at that car! Like, listen to it roar. If you're the sort of person who'd be like, oh wow, what do they have to do to earn that car? That's the sort of languaging as well. We don't want to get caught up in that sort of gossipy type things either. So it's being really conscious of how we respond and also how we support others, because we don't know what somebody's been through to get something. Yes, somebody may have got something that we don't perceive they deserve or have worked for, but others may have really worked their butts off to get it, or they literally might be just renting it for the day. As you know, we have no idea what's going on. So that then leads to something else, which is we don't make assumptions. So watching the languaging that we have around everything that we say, and if we're talking specifically about money here, and it's not just the direct words, it's also our responses and our thoughts. And perhaps there's sometimes some envy that comes in there as well. And that's human, but just be aware of it. And then the assumptions that we make from what we see too, Facebooks, the social medias, all of that is really, really rife for that sort of thing, because we'll see something which is like a little snapshot. I have this photo of my daughter when she was a baby, and one photo is literally like the like mouth open screaming, and then the next moment is smiles. And it's like that's life. Well, you know, we literally see that little sliver on a photograph that got captured in a moment, candid moments often as well, or staged too. Yeah. And then we compare our lives to that. And we make assumptions about what somebody else's life is like and what they've done to earn whatever they've done or what they haven't done. And we like to try and kind of victimize ourselves or others as a result of it. And that's something else. I'd like get out of that victim mode as well.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm going to actively choose something rather than sit there and go, oh, well, I don't know why that doesn't happen to me.
And that means that they have to be the driver of the bus in their own lives rather than just being a passenger, isn't it?
Yes. So it's not always an easy thing, and you've got to look at yourself in the mirror, but ultimately we are the drivers of our own cars, our own destinies, our own lifestyles.
Yeah. Yeah. And the car's a good analogy there, depending on what car we want to drive.
Yes.
We may not want to drive the bus in our life. We might want to drive that Maserati, but be the driver and not back in the passenger seat, so you've got that control of it. And it is quite a negative, you know. I remember, but it used to be quite common, and probably is, when people see, you know, the massive houses and the cars, and they go, oh, they must be selling drugs. They could just have sort of, you know, start an internet business or something, and things are going right, or they could be $3 million in debt. We don't know
exactly
what's going on. I really like that point, because that sets up your framework then as to where you then start those values and assumptions and ideas.
Yeah.
And it's not the healthiest place to be in when you're making a judgment call on someone else. It's priorities. You know, our priority has not been, you know, it's got a really nice house, it's fine, it's got a great backyard and pool and stuff, but it's not been, you know, let's keep upscaling. Our priority over, you know, last 30 years has been going to new places.
Yeah, experiences.
And that's where we've been happy to invest our money and time is to do that. And you take away photographs and memories and a few little trinkets, but it's not something that people go, whoa, look at that.
Yeah, that's it.
And in a very different space.
Yeah, and it's a more empowering place to be as well, when you realize that you're in control of what you want to do. Stop worrying about other people. Stop comparing. Stop giving them that energy as well. Because, you know, my daughter, again, I see at school, there's this one girl, and she and her kind of clash a bit. I think there's a little bit of, you know, similarity there. But I was like, why focus so much on that person? Do you actually like them? No. Well, then stop worrying about them. Let them do them. You do you. You know, and it's the same thing with money as well. Stop worrying about everyone else. And especially as a woman, stop trying to make everyone else happy. Focus on the things you can control, which is you and your responses and who you want to be as a person and how you want your life to be. Those are the things. Stop kind of looking at, oh, well, so-and-so's got that. Did they really deserve it? Well, even if they did or didn't, you can't do anything about that. All you can do something about is what you're spending your money on, how you see yourself, what you, you know, my last car we had for 20 years. Did I get teased about it? Yeah. Was it friendly teasing? Yeah, probably, but okay. My dad used to be embarrassed to go in my car.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't really care. You can drive in your car if you don't want to lift. Like, and it's, and even other things as well. We had a child come around and went to our TV instead. I was like, we don't have that kind of TV. It's like the old fashioned kind. You need a remote to work. So it's just stuff like that. I was like, I don't value any of that. I don't have my house connected to, I don't know, whatever the series or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Lexus or whatever. Yeah. I don't really want my house talking to me. I'm quite happy to have slightly low tech because that's just how I'm comfortable being. So you just, like I was saying, just focus on yourself and what sort of life you want. If you want to, all of that stuff, that is no problem at all. Mm. Don't let anyone make you feel guilty for it either.
No, absolutely. And it is, again, comes back to those values. Now, the three final points, and I've covered them and we'll cover them again,
yes,
but I always like three things that people can just take away right at this instant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first one is know your values, because that will help steer your ship or your car for whatever decisions you need to make, especially if you're at a crossroads and you're trying to figure out what direction to go. So values is key. Secondly, then, is understanding what your I have to actually read this now because I've covered so many things. I understand what you want and why. So where your values then link into your why and why you want it will also help you, because especially if things get tough and if you're starting to change in this process, you'll probably get some resistance from people who don't understand what's going on. So if you have your why and your values and you'll stick to those, it'll make it a lot easier to make any more dramatic changes that you need to make. But my third one is understand what your just one next step is. So even if that's looking at your insurances, call your insurance company, sit on the phone. Usually it's half an hour or so. You go through your policy and you can actually say to them, so look, you know, the policy, I know all of mine have gone up quite a lot. So I just want to see where I can save some money here now. You know, is it in excesses? Most of them have already dropped, you know, increased the excesses and the premiums as well. But have a understand, because otherwise you'll sit there and how do I do it? I hear that a lot. How do I figure out what I do next? Mm. Replay this if you need to, because there's a lot of tips in here as well, but figure out what your one next step is, even if it's understand what your values are, or let's just have a look at all the streaming services. It can be little things, or it could even
interest rates on loans as well.
Yes, now. Absolutely.
That can save a lot of money if someone's got a big loan.
Yeah, refinance if you need to. Contact your existing lender and see what they're offering, because quite often they'll offer, this is something that really irks me, a lot of companies will offer new clients lower rates than their existing ones. Mm. So I'll be aware of that, and when I'll phone them, I'm just like, so I'm a loyal customer that you've already paid to get. If you want to keep me, how about you give me that rate? Or can you do even better than that?
Yeah.
Ask those sorts of questions. So yes, interest rates, the things that will be the big hitters. Mm. Also wills. I see this a lot. Not many people have wills in place.
Oh, you've hit a topic of $400-something to get a will done.
Get it. It's, and guardianship for children. That's the other thing too. I know it's a really unpleasant concept to think about, but it's a really important one. And you can get it all done all at once. You just have one level of effort and then it's done. And generally you don't, if you have a good lawyer, you generally don't have to touch it again unless you get married.
Someone the other day my father died intestate and in New South Wales, and 6 months later and he didn't have a lot at all, didn't. $19,000. $19,000 went to the New South Wales government.
Holy moly. Yeah,
so he only had about 120 or something. That $19,000. And I spoke to someone the other day, $57,000 out of the $500,000 estate went to the 10%. Government. Get a will.
Get a will. So that's all right. So there's, if you want one other next step, just go get a will. And if you don't have one of those, go fix up your interest rates.
Yeah.
Giving you some hows right there.
Yeah. It's a passion thing of mine because, you know, particularly
you've experienced the pain.
Absolutely. And like, you don't mind if someone's organizing something, you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
But
it could have been all set up.
Whatever it was of the total, yeah. It's not good. Alpha, how can people get in touch with you and find your podcast and everything as well?
Yeah, I have a number of different ways. So yeah, my podcast is Money with Alpha. And you'll be able to hear the lovely Janine on there as well. Mm-hmm. And I've got Alpha Money Made Simple on Instagram. I'm MMS Money Made Simple on Facebook. You can even email me directly at alpha@money-madesimple.com.au. And my website is money-madesimple.com.au.
It's all very simple. And I'll have it all in the show notes as well, so you'll be able to find Alpha. I have just enjoyed the conversation. There is so much great content in there. And as you suggested, maybe if somebody should listen to it again just to get the ideas and apply that one step.
Yes. Yeah. Just needs one to get you started. And then you'll be like, oh, I've done that. I'll need to do this now. And then the next, and it just starts to snowball. So just one step you need to get started.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you very much, Alpha. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise. It's been fabulous.
Thank you.
That's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm Janine Vosper, your host. Remember, you can have a chat with me by booking a discovery call by going to janinevosper.com. And trust me, if I am not the person that will be able to help you achieve your dreams and goals, then I know a lot of people who can. Have a fantastic day, week, month, whenever you're listening to this, and love your life and watch your money. Bye-bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.